first heard this story some years ago, a woman was traveling through Kansas City with her three-year-old daughter. She had been to visit family. She was heading home. And as she drove through Kansas City, just north of the metro area, she blew a tire on her car. She pulled over onto the shoulder immediately, but the shoulder wasn't very wide, and there was a steep embankment, and the blowout, of course, had occurred on a driver's side tire. She was a little worried about trying to change it because the traffic was coming by at 75, 80 miles an hour. And I don't know if you've ever been stuck on the side of the interstate before, but a car coming past you at 80 miles an hour drags a tailwind with it that will shake your car back and forth. And God forbid that it's a semi-truck that comes by, because it's a tidal wave of wind behind them that is coming. So the woman was worried. She was worried about the car getting hit. She was worried about her getting hit trying to change the tire. So she got out on the passenger side of the car, and she got her daughter out of the car seat in the back. And they walked down the steep embankment so they were away from the car, so if it did get hit, they wouldn't be close to it. She called her husband. She said, "What should I do?" And the husband said, "You need to get some help. I can't get there to you." So he told her, "Call 911. Maybe you can get the motorist assist, that truck that comes around, helps people in distress." So she called 911. She explained the situation. She didn't have to wait very long. It wasn't the motorist assist that pulled up. It was a state patrolman. He pulled up behind her car. He turned his lights on so that traffic would move over. He walked down the embankment. He talked to the woman, helped calm her down. He went back up and changed the tire. And he was helping her get her daughter strapped back into the car seat so they could go. And he said, "Can I ask a favor?" He said, "Usually I keep something in my car to give to kids when I meet them like this." He said, "But I'm out. I thought I had more in my trunk and I don't. Would you follow me? Our headquarters are just 5 minutes down the road, and I can get some more. And I can give one to your daughter." And the woman was so thankful. She said, "Absolutely." She followed him down to the headquarters. And he ran in and he came back out holding a small blanket. It had been a small quilted blanket. It was a couple feet by a couple feet. It wasn't very big. But he brought it out and he opened the back door of the car and he told the little girl, he said, "Whenever I meet kids in scary situations," he said, "volunteers make these blankets for me so that I can give them to somebody who might be scared or worried or in trouble. I can give them this blanket and let them know things are going to be okay." And he said, I want you to have this blanket." And he reached out and he gave it to her. Today is Church World Services Blanket Sunday. All during the month of February, our Disciples Women's Ministry is going to be collecting money for blankets through Church World Service. They've participated in this for years. These blankets are given to people in need after a tragedy, during a hardship, when people find themselves faced with the cold cruelness of the world. Church World Service steps in and offers a warm blanket, a heartfelt and necessary gesture. Now, like I told the kids, a blanket's not going to fix all the ills of the world. To the person in the midst of that tragedy, this blanket will not cure all that they are facing. But the comfort, the warmth, the security, the hope that a blanket can bring certainly is a good place to start. In our scripture this morning, James calls us as disciples to live out our faith, to live a faith that is evident to the world. The problem with faith is this: you can't see my faith. My faith is an internal thing. It is what I think, it is what I feel, it is what I believe. You can't peer into my mind and see what it is I believe. You can't peer into my heart and see what it is that I feel. My core faith is an inner secret that only I truly know, but you will never fully see. James realizes that if that faith is within us, that faith of Jesus Christ, then there should be an outer acknowledgement of it. There should be a sign of its presence. There should be a record of how that faith within us makes us live, affects us, changes us, leads us, guides us. The world around me should be able to see my faith, my innermost beliefs, my very spirit in how I live my life, how I act every day. Every little step I take should be a glaring reflection of the faith within me. The world around me should be able to see my faith through my works. That is a daunting undertaking. That is a heavy thing to consider, that the world around me should be able to see my faith, should be able to see what it is that I believe in, the ways that I work. James tells us, what good is it if you say you have faith but do not have works? If a brother or sister is naked and lacks daily food, and one of you says to them, go in peace, keep warm, good luck, what is the good of that? So faith by itself, if it has no works, is dead. But someone will say, you have faith and I have works. Show me your faith without works, and I, by my works, will show you my faith. The old nursery rhyme song tells us, right? If you're happy and you know it, then your face is gonna show it. In the first service, I forgot to give all of that verse. I just said, if you're happy, you know it. And they all said, clap your hands. And I said, no, the end of the verse. They said, you're going to sing more of it in the second service. And I said, yes, I am. I'm going to lead them down that path. Absolutely. If we're happy and we know it, then our face is going to show it. If we have the faith of Jesus Christ within us, then our life should show it. Our actions should show it. Our daily walk should show it. Our works should show it. You shouldn't have to tell people that you believe in God. They should see it in your works. You shouldn't have to tell people that you believe in the saving grace of Jesus Christ. They should see it in your works. You shouldn't have to tell people how your faith has changed you. They should see it in your works. That is a lot to deal with. The idea that there's an ever cognizant realization that the life I live is telling the world about my faith, about how and what I believe, that complete strangers around me every day are getting a small glimpse of what my faith is, and I wonder, what do they see? I mean, Lord, when I consider this, that somehow my works are going to bear out the faith within me, where do I even start? I want to live my faith. Look around and I find a world that is strange and cold, full of struggle and pain and heartache. How can I live my faith effectively when there is so much fear, so much worry, so much hurt going on? Where do I even start? The Israelites had a very interesting practice that they used to engage in. Every seventh year, they would declare a year of remission. It was a year of forgiveness, a year when you're supposed to let go of past burdens and sins, a year that reminds you of the saving grace of God. To show this internal faith to the world, during the seventh year, the Israelites were instructed to forgive all their debts. Not just their internal debts, their debts of sin, but external, actual, financial debts. If someone owed you money during this seventh year, you were to forgive that loan. You forgave debts to show you were letting go of your own internal debts with God. You were showing that you understood grace and forgiveness and mercy by showing grace and forgiveness and mercy. But in our reading this morning from Deuteronomy, they offered a warning as well when it comes to giving. It says, do not be hard-hearted or tight-fisted with your needy neighbor. You should rather open your hand, willingly lend enough to meet the need, whatever it may be. Then it says, be careful that you do not entertain a mean thought. In other words, give because it's been given to you. Forgive because you are forgiven. They had to issue this warning because they had a problem. Some people would watch the calendar, and if they saw that seventh year approaching, if they were getting close to it, if they were 6.5 years into it, they knew the seventh year was coming just around the corner, just a few months down the road, and you came to them and asked for help, they would not loan to you at that time because they were afraid they wouldn't see the money again, because by the time it was time for you to pay it back, we'd be into that seventh year, and then I'd have to forgive the loan. So there were people who were not giving because the calendar told them not to. They were watching the calendar. They wouldn't give. They were hard-hearted. They were tight-fisted. And God says, don't worry about that. That's not the point. The point is that we help each other. That we reach out to our neighbor in need. That we open our hand to them. That we show them grace and forgiveness and mercy, regardless of whether it's that seventh year or not. Deuteronomy says, give liberally and be ungrudging when you do so. For on this account, the Lord your God will bless you in all your work and in all you undertake. Since there will never cease to be some in need on the earth, I therefore command you, open your hand to the poor and needy neighbor in your land. God instructs God's children to be graceful at all times. Regardless if that year of forgiveness was coming right up, God instructs us to be forgiving. God instructs us to be caring. God instructs us to be merciful. Perhaps that's where we could start in trying to figure out how to live out our faith, how to show our faith in our works. Maybe mercy is where we could start. We can't fix all the ills of the world, and it can be overwhelming to even consider it. But mercy seems like a good place to begin. Be merciful to one another. Show mercy. When you see someone who is scared, show them mercy. When you see someone who is worried, show them mercy. When you see someone who is hurting, show them mercy. When you see someone who is alone, show them mercy. Mercy is not going to fix all their problems, but it's a pretty good place to start. Think about when you were scared, when you were hurt, when you were lonely, and someone showed you mercy in a kind word, in a loving gesture, in a compassionate presence. It didn't take it all away, but didn't it warm your heart for just a moment? Just a moment, didn't it remind you that even though you could feel the darkness encroaching in, there was still light? For just a moment, someone's faith shown to you in a merciful act brought a little hope, a little peace, a little comfort, a little warmth into a cold place. We are called to live our faith, to show what we believe in how we act, in our works, to let our faith guide our works so the world might see Jesus in them. What better place to start than by showing mercy? James tells us that judgment will be without mercy to anyone who has shown no mercy. Mercy triumphs over judgment. You won't always know the right thing to do and the right thing to say and the right thing to be, but you can always offer someone mercy. That little girl in the story was my daughter, Abigail. She's hung on to this blanket her whole life. It sits at the end of her bed. It's not very big, as you can see. It doesn't really work for an adult. It is a child-sized blanket. But she loves this blanket. All growing up, she would have it on the end of her bed, folded up there. And if you asked her about it, she would tell you the story of her and her mother on the side of the road, how scary it was when the big trucks came rumbling by, and how that state patrolman showed up and rescued them. got them on their way again. All through her life, she has referred to this as her police officer's blanket. This is why we collect money for blankets. All throughout the years, we look at the different things we have to give toward. We have to decide where our resources go. This offering comes back time and again. It's why we collect money for blankets. Not because a blanket will cure every woe when someone's home is destroyed, or they lose a loved one, or their life is thrown upside down, but because in that moment of distress, in that moment of fear, in that moment of hopelessness, into the cold callousness of this world, a blanket brings a little warmth. Because it is mercy,